Chrome Yellow by Aldous Huxley. Read from LibriVox.org by Martin Clifton. Chapter 8. Breakfast on Sunday morning was an hour later than on weekdays, and Priscilla, who usually made no public appearance before luncheon, honored it with her presence. Dressed in black silk, with a ruby cross as well as her customary ring of pearls round her neck, she presided. An enormous sounding paper concealed all but the extreme pinnacle of her coiffure from the outer world. "I see Surrey has won," she said with her mouth full, "by 4 wickets. The sun is in Leo, that would account for it. Splendid game, cricket," remarked Mr. Barbecue-Smith heartily to no one in particular, "so thoroughly English." Jenny, who was sitting next to him, woke up suddenly with a start. "What?" she said. "What?" "So English," repeated Mr. Barbecue-Smith. Jenny looked at him, surprised. "English? Of course I am." He was beginning to explain when Mrs. Wimbush veiled her Sunday paper and appeared, a square, mauve, powdered face in the midst of orange splendors. "I see there's a new series of articles on the next world just beginning," she said to Mr. Barbecue-Smith. "This one's called Summerland and Gehenna." "Summerland," echoed Mr. Barbecue-Smith, closing his eyes. "Summerland, a beautiful name. Beautiful, beautiful." Mary had taken the seat next to Dennis. After a night of careful consideration, she had decided on Dennis. He might have less talent than Gombauld, he might be a little lacking in seriousness, but somehow he was safer. "Are you writing much poetry here in the country?" she asked, with a bright gravity. "None," said Dennis curtly. "I haven't brought my typewriter." "But you mean to say you can't write without a typewriter?" Dennis shook his head. He hated talking at breakfast, and besides, he wanted to hear what Mr. Scogan was saying at the other end of the table. "My scheme for dealing with the church," Mr. Scogan was saying, "is beautifully simple. At the present time, the Anglican clergy wear their colours the wrong way round. I would compel them to wear not only their collars, but all their clothes turned back to front. Coat, waistcoat, trousers, boots, so that every clergyman should present to the world a smooth facade, unbroken by stud, button or lace. The enforcement of such a livery would act as a wholesome deterrent to those intending to enter the church. At the same time, it would enormously enhance what Archbishop Lord so rightly insisted on, the beauty of holiness, and the few incorrigibles who could not be deterred." "In hell, it seems," said Priscilla, reading in her Sunday paper, "the children amuse themselves by flaying lambs alive." "Ah, but, dear lady, that's only a symbol," exclaimed Mr. Barbecue-Smith, "a material symbol of a spiritual truth. abolish the military elegance of standardizing uniform of sackcloth and mackintosh. You will very soon find that. Is anyone coming to church with me this morning? Asked Henry Wimbush. No one responded. He baited his bare invitation. I read the lessons, you know, and as Mr. Bodyhen, his sermons are sometimes worth hearing. Thank you, said Barchesmith. I, for one, prefer to worship in the infinite church of nature. How does our Shakespeare put it? Sermons.